Hello, this is Daryl War for August 2023 and the retrospective of episode 19 in the radio drama The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, for those out of the know, is a relief series, radio drama relief series, multi-fandom, for the 1960s soap opera Dark Shadows. That was the original intention, inviting a whole lot of other shows, movies, fandoms that took place around the same time period, though didn't necessarily, you know, the productions didn't come around at the same time period. Therefore, we've got Wadsworth from Clue, because he's from 1954, he's a little bit older, and then there were other things that were out of place initially when I got started with the first episode, like the Ghostbusters people and the Poltergeist people, but that we have time travel, so I was like, oh, let it lie, let it be, you know, it's a good gate crash episode, the first one. But yeah, then a lot of bad things have happened in real life along the way, and I discovered what those are, and that's what the whole of the podcast, you know, lasting over 10 years now is all about, unfortunately. But I used all the escape routes that I could figure out to get away from persuasive tech and surveillance tech and all those things. And I have a history of recording a lot of stuff and reviewing it and re-listening to it and re-watching it over and over again. So I have been more in the know of how these big tech tricks work than a lot of other people. I lived through many strange times and a lot of contradictions and sniffed out the new ones pretty quick. But I wish I had escaped them sooner, but I think I'm doing pretty good for all that. In any case, we would like to jump right in to episode 19. It was called Happy Hour in Hell. I remember when Helena was part of the project, she suggested Happy Hour with Diabolos, the name of which I've misspelled quite a few times. It should have an extra O, but I spelled it without that. I just thought Diablos rather than Diabolos. But I got really attached to Happy Hour in Hell, so we went with that. And so I will also go through the discussion, because the entire reason that I worked so hard was I was just desperately, after sharing the script for about 2 years, I noticed, I noticed there were statistics, and when I saw the statistics, I'm like, how is it that so many people are looking at this and have never said a word in almost 2 years now? 18 months. Minus Helena, which is how we became such good friends, and she just has a knack. And a love of the written word and a love of storytelling and, like a lot of us, needs and wants to talk about the story, discuss the story. She even did this. I remember talking to her about how Noxzema was created and the purpose of that and the back history of that, and then she went to go look at it, and then she was catching things in the story of Noxzema that I had not caught. That was just a couple of years ago. It was really amazing. So yeah, a lot of us humans, the difference between the critters and us, to our understanding, is narrative discourse and narrative discussion and following the story, and that's the whole deal. And we got very critter-like with this tech problem, and we stopped talking about that, and all it became about side versus side. And I had a pen pal. I was recently responding to her letter, and she was all, at the end of her letter, she's like, how is Dark Shadows? And I'm like, good question. Dark Shadows is very straightforward, or so you would think, but the fans are incredibly confused from what I've seen, and there's all this hate for Barnabas, and there's like this team versus team over romantic pairings, and yeah, it's been a lot like professional wrestling, except in an extremely serious way, and it's as if Rowdy Roddy Piper is a patron saint or the Pope or something, and it's not a joke, you know, it's gotten very, very terrifying, and, you know, but with me, when I get impassioned about the characters, it's because I was in a bad place for a long time, and I got this fun idea, and then the fun idea took over, and it started to heal all this bad stuff that had been accumulating in my life. So, of course, I was going to be all into it and wanting help from the right people. I did not know what was going on with the human race, like, changing so drastically. You know, I did my best to empathize and sympathize and go along with it, but yeah, I went nuts. There's a lot of evidence of me being nuts, but the thing is, because of the surveillance that I did on myself and had in my life and with other people and all that, since I was 6 years old, you know, it was magnetic technology. That back then, you know, 80s and 90s, people were afraid or offended by it. They did not want to be recorded at all. So living in this world now, it's nuts for me to see the difference. It's drastically different. But still, because I did that, I had a very different life than a lot of other people. Because you have to face your flaws. You have to face a lot of stuff. You can tape over it, sure, but when you tape over it, your memory can hold on for a while, and then you'll wish you had the tape back to be absolutely sure, was that the stupid thing I did, or was it not quite like that? And then it helps you, me even doing this podcast, I have to edit a lot. So the super eloquent Daryl War that you hear sometimes, she ain't that eloquent. It took a lot of editing. And so if you do a recording, even just like a personal audio letter to a friend, let yourself just go and then do all that editing to perfect it and then listen to yourself. And you will sometimes be able to assert that part of yourself that was edited and perfected. It's kind of incredible, this whole experience. Like, I'm not sure I'll even have to edit that much of this intro here. So, that's one of the reasons that I am not ashamed to have all this cuckoo of me out there, because there's so much cuckoo. I mean, we've got celebrity cuckoo out there. I do not consider myself a celebrity. Maybe other people do. But I was sharing for friendship and sharing for narrative discussion, and everybody was in this, like, we'll have more celebrity than Andy Warhol ever dreamed of for each of us. And I'm like, no, connect with the people that you jive with, and that's the deal. That's what we got. So that's why, with all the crazy celebrity cuckoo and the media cuckoo and the all the hype out there, that's why it's like, well, you know, it happened to me. I was one of the guinea pigs, one of the early guinea pigs. And then it starts all this crazy pervasive tech and big tech and social media, which I call social casino stuff, because a lot of those big platforms are built that way. I consider that I went through it. We've seen what it did to me. And I go, yeah. And that's why I put dates so loudly on a lot of these shows and a lot of what I do. And that's why I hated Tumblr, because it didn't have any dates. So you could look at something that was 6 years old and think it's brand new. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's probably changed, but I'm not going over there. I'm done. So yeah, there's a lot of cuckoo, and you gotta learn from it. And the best way that you can learn is to surveil yourself and to watch yourself and to re-listen and re-watch yourself, I am sorry to say. No beautifiers. Nothing to tweak with the images or the sound or anything. You just hear it verbatim as possible. And I mention the editing because that's how you can improve yourself. You listen to your mistakes over and over again, and then you start improving on them. And then you listen to the improvements, and you go, because you're editing, I want that to be me in the future. It won't be you in the past. If you want it to be you in the future, it is possible. And I am here to say it happened to me. Okay, that's enough selling myself. That's not, you know, I just want to make friends with everybody. I talk to everybody like I'm writing a letter. All right, so we need to dive in. How much time have I wasted here? Ooh, that's a lot. So we are also missing Barnabas Collins in this one, I do believe. I was just reading, you know, a bit of both. And yeah, I don't think Barnabas is in this one either. So almost everything but the kitchen sink. Just like 18. Yeah, I did. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I was dreaming about this one for years. This the opening. It's like, do I really want to use that song? Yes, I do. And it's so sad because it feels like almost every episode I have a strong Ghost of Mrs. Muir scene. It's conflicted with having something like really dark in it. or something that Ghost of Mrs. Muir fans generally would not be into. Like, you know, episode 4 had all the sweet transvestite Rocky Horror stuff. I don't know why. Maybe it's just like a balancing act. I don't know why that happens. It happens so often. But yeah, this one has a strong Ghost of Mrs. Muir, you know, Carolyn and Carolyn. I still think that's funny. I'm still so proud of that, like, overlaid image of Hope Lange and Nancy Barrett. I did that, you know, like, the two together, and it's like, oh, I'm still so, like, that's so cool! And that, I think, yeah, that was for episode 4, because you never hear Captain Greg in episode 4. I was going with the movie version where you just hear Mrs. Muir muttering under her breath, being annoyed, because he's always bothering her. Nobody else can hear or see him. And you get that in the TV show, but you can see him, so you just have to imagine that the other players can't see Edward Mulhare playing the captain most of the time. So, oh, we got Martha in this one, too. I just remembered that. But anyway, so we got Sir Simon Milligan, Hecubus, and Hecubus, yes, I'm ready to serve you, Master, and Slatterns, and one of pen pals I have was like, oh, she didn't recognize that, you know, I was getting the word slatterns. The main reason I know that word is from the Fairacre series, the Miss Reed Fairacre series. Oh, you know what? I wonder if we could look up a definition for slatterns. A dirty, untidy woman. origin, mid-17th century, related to slattering, slovenly, from dialect slatter, to spill, slop.
Okay.
So that is kind of where that comes from. Or so we understand. So yeah, we'll have some Ghost of Mrs. Muir and some Bewitched. Obviously, we've got a little Kids in the Hall, because we've always got our host, Milligan and Hecubus. The potential father to her potential half-sister. The summary is reminding me of the beginning of each episode of Soap. Which I barely know Soap. My husband knows that more. Before I talk about, you know, go through the dialogue of the Roger and Carolyn scene. Her thoughts on that scene is Roger and Carolyn discussing whether Victoria is his niece is very funny. Anyone who has ever watched more than a half dozen episodes of Dark Shadows knows just how they feel. Roger's dream. We all became vampires and killed each other. Now, it's hilarious. I can imagine this being wailed in despair during a script writing for Dark Shadows when somebody finally realized that they were well and truly out of plot twists. Now, and that's the thing, is that idea that's coming from House of Dark Shadows. That was the thing with the dream. I mean, there's all this stuff in Roger's dream that he talks about. I mean, that's totally lifted from House of Dark Shadows. And I think Helena figured that out, too. So let us look over the scene. Yeah, it just kind of starts with, oh gosh, and I even put in the script, wacky flute, like, you know, after the wave-crashing Dark Shadows opening theme, you know, usual, wacky flute-like DS opening tune, preparing you for hilarious consequences, footsteps, fireplace. So that's the background. Roger calls Carolyn Kitten, asks if she checked the mail, she says no, and that he lets her know that he, you know, he just received this letter from Scooter Bay, Mrs. Carolyn Muir. Then Carolyn asks, oh, turning and rustling paper, and Roger says, please tell me there is something fun involved, because he's getting bored, the guy's getting bored. Oh, and Mrs. Muir wants to see Carolyn, and Roger's so kind of catching the audience up with, well, your mom's left, and oh, it's just me, you, and Cousin Barnabas running things, and so this is me making up for how quick episode 17, you know, Elizabeth leaves, and Carolyn doesn't know, like, she hasn't been told, like, and she's kind of freaking out, like, I've got some half-sister, and I was never told, and I know what it's about, or, you know, I know some of it what it's about, and I think Helena was concerned, like, why isn't Roger concerned, too? So this is sort of making up for that, as well as the Carolyn and Carolyn scene sort of makes up for that. Elizabeth did this thing earlier that we didn't see. So she says, Uncle Roger, I'm not sure, but it appears that my mother contacted Mrs. Muir prior to her trip. So, yeah, this is me sweeping up my own mistakes, because I was in such a hurry to get episode 17 finished and get those girls on the boat. Let's see. Carol says, it sounds as if there is more. I needed to find out, and Mrs. Muir knows about that. I should go and see her. Roger says, why not? What else is there to do around here? The cannery practically runs itself, and all the hauntings finally seem to be content. But then Carolyn confesses that's not what's haunting her. What if Victoria Winters is my half-sister? And Roger says, then we could compare your mother's partners to mine. At least hers disappear mysteriously rather than turning out to be some queer supernatural concoction no one can describe. Carolyn's tutting Uncle Roger. And Roger apologizes, I'm getting too used to having nothing to do. And just, well, what if Victoria is your sister, hey? We could bring her back home, and then we could all tease each other more mercilessly than we did before. Why, I think that would be splendid fun. So, yeah, I don't think it's just the Dale Carnegie book that's chilling Roger out. I think he's just coming to accept, like, oh my gosh, you know, we're finally dealing with the fact that we have a lot of spooky things here, and I am ready to accept most anything, and if Victoria is my niece, so be it. And Carolyn says, I think you hit the nail right on the head. Because he just, in the pit, and also in the original Dark Shadows show, he's pretty aware that, like, the house is built on scandal. Like, it's just like the way things are. Rather than worry ourselves, he says to Carolyn, about scandalous notions, we could go through the family history and poke fun at each other with all the frivolity of including her, Victoria Winters, in it. And after Carolyn laughs at, well, it's a fun idea, like, was there ever a time you suspected all this to be true? And he didn't. Well, Victoria was there for a while. He kind of did when she first arrived. And he had all this stuff going on that he was thinking about. And he was just wanting to escape the madness of the previous time with David and Laura when he was just living with them. He said, I was so wrapped up in my own unhappiness, I didn't concern myself much with the whys and where-to-fores. At that time, I was simply wanting to come home and shelter in this mansion of madness again. Better the devil you know and all that. So, you know, it was more just about, like, getting away from the tragedy of Laura Collins, and also the tragedy of his son, because then Elizabeth can't take over. So Carolyn asks, when did you decide it was possible that Victoria was, you know, a niece to him? And he's like, I'm not sure who anyone is anymore. Gracious. If Victoria is my niece, then so be it. In fact, I had this lengthy dream once.
Or was it a dream?
And this is the part where it's, yeah, I'm taken from House of Dark Shadows, just direct. That we had a niece named Daphne. And I've never been sure whose niece she was either, mine or your mother's. Now, this is something that, if you remember Lisa Weinberg, that was something we talked about a lot. And give me a call if you're listening, Lisa. I got it. Yeah, man, I missed you. And she talked about a lot, like, what niece? Whose niece? You know, she was just like, they never say whose niece she was. They're like, who is this Daphne? Whose niece is she? Like, she, it was just wonderful. She would always complain about it. I just love that. It was something that, like, about Lisa you could rely on when it came to talking about House of Dark Shadows. Like, whose niece was Daphne? Was it Rogers? Or, like, where did she come from? Like, it was just beautiful. So I had to throw that in there just for the sake that Lisa completely abused me, you know, just entirely. Oh, it's just, it is just hilarious. And this is one of the reasons, like, forget spoilers. There are too many Trivial Pursuit questions about this Dark Shadows fandom. We shouldn't even be worrying over romantic pairings because it is so difficult to keep track of all the details. We should be doing everything we can to keep track of the details. And that's why a lot of the fan fiction over the years, you know, me and Lisa were talking about, like, you know, it's like fan fiction based on other fan fiction because nobody had the whole series. And then all of a sudden it kind of became about tack on the names and do your own thing. And this is, you relieve your personal catharsis and then share it with the world and don't warn them that that's what you're doing. And, you know, it's like, I would get so angry because it's like, who warns the newbies or, you know, nobody? Yeah, I remember, I mean, it reminds me also of what Oisin was talking about, like, the convention, the festival, yeah, she was like, it was so disorganized, and it's like, yeah, it's so, that says it right there, you know, this, the lack of organization, and as much as I'm bringing all the more crazy and the more fandoms and merging them into Dark Shadows, which is already based on a ton of gothic novels anyway, the soap opera itself, I'm trying to make cohesion and relief and solving things with all this other help, with fandoms that have or have had a lot of cohesion already. And I didn't know that that was the problem at all. I didn't know that, good heavens, it's like the other fandoms need to help the Dark Shadows fandom. I was just thinking the characters would help each other. That's all I was thinking. And I was like, oh, heavens to Betsy. You know, seeing just the crazy disorganization. So that's why I say focusing on the Trivial Pursuit is what helps this thing. And that's why Lisa was just perfect. Because she was like, Daphne, whose niece is she? Like, where does she come from? What? You know, like, you just get so lost. But the House of Dark Shadows is a puzzle unto itself. Like, there's all these other trivial components when it comes to House of Dark Shadows. And Night of Dark Shadows, more so. Let us not go there right now. Other people can. Great novelization. I can't remember who put it together, like a director's cut version novelization. And in on fanfiction.net, Collins Mausoleum, I think. But anyway, yeah, he makes sense of the madness from what he could find. And so as Roger goes on about this dream in episode 19, Happy Hour in Hell, in my series, The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, the interruption relief series. So he's going on about, you know, his dream and not knowing where this Daphne came from is absolutely surreal, as dreams are apt to be, because it's true, you know, like you'll flush the toilet and suddenly be on the moon, stuff like that. Dreams are weird. So, and he says, Jason McGuire played the role of town sheriff, and that is true. Dennis Patrick, they hired him to play the sheriff, and you're just thinking, you know, if anybody who watched the show and saw this movie, they're going to be like, why is a very long ago villain suddenly the sheriff? Or they'd be like, oh, hey, it's Dennis Patrick, cool. But yeah, him being the sheriff in Roger's dream, that just about wore out Dr. Hoffman trying to explain why he was the sheriff to your mother. And I think I had something on Pinterest somewhere that I made a caption. You know, I was making all these images of House of Dark Shadows, and I put a caption into this. Yes, Mrs. Stoddard, this is very strange, but for some reason Jason McGuire is the sheriff. Then, going back to episode 19 here. Yikes, what else happened in the dream, Uncle Roger? And he says wistfully, oh, we all became vampires and killed each other. I was almost disappointed to wake up. She says, so it would seem. Well, what? Do you need a car to go out to Scooter Bay, kitten? And Carolyn Snickers, yes, Uncle Roger, I most decidedly do. So, yeah, we covered a lot of ground with that second scene with Carolyn and Roger. And the discussion? Entire reason for sharing it all. Conversation between Carolyn and Roger from One Pen Pal was nice to hear. The little banter between them was very familial and added a lot to the scene. I can't wait to hear what goes on when Carolyn arrives in Schooner Bay to talk with Mrs. Muir. I think, she's a Ghost of Mrs. Muir fan, so that would definitely intrigue her. It was also interesting to hear that dream of Roger's. I wonder if it's foreshadowing for something, or if that was the joke you mentioned. Yeah, I probably did tell her about, House of Dark Shadows and how that went down. And from Hidden Object, I enjoy Roger poking fun with, rather than turning out to be some queer supernatural concoction no one can describe, which is Laura Collins, you know. And who else ever, that Roger might have, oh gosh, yeah, Cassandra, you know. Same thing. Oh, golly. And his comment of, I'm not even sure who anyone is anymore. Yeah, it's so true. So true. Roger would just be like, I don't know. When it comes to, Victoria Winters is mini, so be it. Let's see, another pen pal. This is the one the pen pal was like, oh my gosh, she was all for it years ago. This show, I've got to use my brain. I love it. To serve slatterns and the place goes quiet. And from Roger, please tell me something fun is involved. And to not be sure to visit Mrs. Muir or not, that is an interesting question. Curiosity is an odd trait to have. Getting too used to having nothing to do, and it would explain her mom's issues. Love going through the family history and poking fun at everyone. Yikes, all vampires and killed each other. At least Roger was forthcoming to her in everything. That's something. So she's impressed with Roger. And what else for that scene? Oh, yeah, the guy who helped me with sound effects. Would that be Ogre's voice in the background I hear? Yeah, he got the, in the intro. That was My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. He recognized the tune. Hecubus finally introduced to someone instead of it being the other way around. And then, quoting Roger, the further we deplete the household populace, the quieter this place will become. Quite a fancy way of saying, I hate people, leave me alone. Roger's right, though. The ghosts and exorcisms have been quiet for the past few episodes. Fun line about enjoying the vampire dream. Also fun how he's eager to help simply out of boredom. Then, let's see, who else? Oh yeah, Guiding Light. I like the idea of Victoria joining Roger and Carolyn, rejoining the family for laughs and togetherness. So she likes the idea of what Roger has in mind. Crazy dream, for sure. It's on the same level of crazy as some of my dreams. I'm so glad some of my favorite characters have found some peace and contentment, as confirmed by Maggie. Excellent recap scene. Love it. And another pen friend. Oh dear, a bit of a CD problem at the start of track 2, and I missed most of its first 3 or 4 minutes, but Roger is talking about a dream in which everyone turned into vampires and killed each other. So yeah, we had some technical problems in the commentary for the Bit of Ultimate Dark Shadows episode 19. But at least it's there. It's amusing in retrospect. Another pen pal. Many stories at once. Great choice of characters. Heart Lily, Heart Endora, Heart Samantha. Roger is just too hilarious. Victoria already haunts Collinwood. Don't you feel it? Feel her absence. Very peppy intro and upbeat. All kinds of music in the Netherworlds. You are becoming comfortable in their roles. So she's meaning me because I'm being everybody. A bonus for a long-running series. Actors become their characters. With Roger and Carolyn, strange to imagine the house without people. But the ghosts are still there and know what Roger means about coming and sheltering in all of this madness again. I'm living it. Home is always a part of you. You can't escape. We all became vampires and killed each other. Teehee. Great stuff. So hopefully I explained to her, oh, that's ripping off House of Dark Shadows. Well, now we have to go to the next scene, which, oh, heavens to Betsy. Yeah, it's one of those Sam and Maggie solve it show scenes. And yet, one of the reasons I love the whole, I make fun of myself, the Sam and Maggie selfish show. I mean, I was looking for a way to save Sam and solve all the other problems, but saving Sam was like one of the first priorities, even though it was like, I know what's going on with Carolyn and Tony, I know what's going on with Barnabas and the reincarnation of Josette Dupre, blah, 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 blah. I'm gonna work on that first, then we can save Pop, blah, blah, blah. Saving Pop, I got Carolyn and Tony together, and that was half of the way of doing that. Because they get the Captain Greg poster, or the painting, sorry, and maybe go take it to Sam Evans, and that works that out. So we get to Milligan explains it. We go to the Evans cottage and eavesdrop on how our reincarnated Duprés come to terms with the knowledge of Chris Jennings returning to Collinsport for the sake of his twin brother Tom, falling prey to a vampire unbeknownst to him or his sister Amy. Sam and Maggie are having a discussion about that and how our beloved witches understand their place in the pit of ultimate dark shadows. Okay. So Maggie asks Pop if things turned out all right, or Mr. Wells. And so we've saved Mr. Wells, like in the episode 18. He'll keep managing the Collinsport Inn as he always does. And see, that's what I figure. I mean, who else is going to run the place? So we got Mr. Wells. It's right there. No worries. And it'll be fun, hopefully, coming up soon. Sam passed the torch. He got saved. Passed the buck to Mr. Wells and helped save Mr. Wells. So Mr. Wells, in proxy, is going to hopefully do the same thing for Madame Findlay. Because I was like, yeah, let's keep this pattern going. Let's see how long we can keep it going. And she admits, I hated to ask you to head over there after all you had to do with Captain Gregg. And Sam scoffs, oh, no matter, what else do I have occupying me anyway? It's you who keep earning the dividends, Maggie. You know, that's the thing. I mean, he was telling Captain Gregg in the last episode, a piss-drunk painter whose daughter had to make ends meet for us to survive. Oh, and then, yeah, I remember really digging how this came about, because I thought of it and I was like, I'm gonna give that to Maggie. It's near and dear to my heart, but I'm gonna give it to Maggie. And I use it as my own quotation, I think, in one of my signatures on LibriVox. Maggie says, all right, now everyone is important, Papa. Everyone changes the world. That's what makes it a world. And I thought of it because I remember there was a bus driver getting harassed many years ago, and I told him, you know, I'm so sorry about what happened. That guy was a jerk. And he's all, yeah, he said, it takes a whole lot of people to make a world. It was something to the effect of that, and it made me think about that. And I was like, yeah, because we all change it. We're all involved. Everybody's involved. So I thought of that years ago, and then I was like, give it to Maggie. Because, I mean, we all get wrapped up in the drama of things, the way that we were raised, and, you know, like, have to be dramatic, and I'm going to make a statement, and I'm going to change the world. And it's like, we all do. Calm down. We all do. We are all involved. Everybody's a key player. And I have definitely learned that playing so many roles, just trying to get into everybody's, you know, shoes and hats and everything. You have so much regard. Maybe I had that before, I don't know, but you just start having so much regard for everyone. And that's one of the reasons that I hate having to accept that somebody is just not with it. It is very frustrating to come to terms with that. But there are some people who are just not with it, and it's difficult. You want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, and it is not applicable in all cases. There's a lot of troubles that you have to accept, and it's difficult for some of us to accept them. So Sam admits to her, I know money isn't everything. Don't mind me, Josette. Old capitalist habits die hard. Because Andre had a lot of those, but Sam, not necessarily. He's more for his art. But he knows that, you know, you gotta make ends meet. And Maggie asks, how was my premonition? Sam lets her know, your feelings about something awry at the inn? Definitely. There was some growling up the stairs. Like a wolf, I kept Mr. Wells from going up to investigate. Was it Chris making the noise? And he says it could have been. I couldn't get a whole lot out of Mr. Wells on that account, but then again, we had more fun reminiscing old times and town gossip. Which is one of the things that we understand Mr. Wells is very renowned for. And Maggie admits, I'm sure he needed it. I'm sure you both did. I just have a feeling Chris is in trouble. It's bad enough with him and Amy losing their brother, Tom. And Sam says, yes, indeed. And when one comes to Collinsport, there is so much going on, we can't keep the hang in most of it. Oh, isn't it true? Oh, yeah. And so she's saying, you know, between this and Captain Gregg and Chris, and I hardly have time to square things away between myself and Barnabas. And how is Barnabas? Sam asks. He's finally enjoying time to catch up on his reading. And, yes, what about Willie? After that glare down with Angelique, he's happy to be at some boring old house upkeep and a bit of penmanship. And there's Wadsworth, and Wadsworth looking after the both of them very well. Now tell me about, Maggie says, Captain making up with a big witch, and Sam is just like, you know, regaling, I wish you could have seen it. After enough nudging, Captain Gregg was ready to assume some responsibility and face her. And then the captain offered to make up for the dance that he refused her 100 years ago. Pretty much, you know, I can't remember exactly when Captain Gregg died, but it was roughly 100 years before this time period in all the shows. And that's the cool thing about The Ghost of Mrs. Mirror, is it is taking place the same time as this stuff in Dark Shadows. It's so neat. Whereas with Addams Family Monsters, that's continuation for their shows. So Ghost of Mrs. Muir is just dead on with hitting the stuff in Dark Shadows that we're interrupting. I didn't get it perfect, I admit, but, you know, I'm doing my best here. And Maggie says, well done, Captain Greg. And Sam admits, well done it was. Orchestral music just flowed from the air. And they get to know Mrs. Stevens, and that she's remarkable. And Maggie asked, is she, how so? He's like, I think, well, you know, Angelique, but Mrs. Stevens, because he's comparing witches, you know. He said, Mrs. Stevens has a completely different set of circumstances she was living in. She had this repose of knowing exactly who she was and what she was about, even if she had to dance around about it, skirting over the issues of her upbringing to get along in our realm, you know. And Maggie says she chooses for herself, you mean. Sam snaps his fingers. That was it. I wasn't sure before, but that is it. Mrs. Stevens made a choice to be different compared to the witches, and it grounds her in what she wants. Perhaps that's why her own mother was against the idea of her domestic living conditions. Between the two, they make the choices that manage so well for them. And Maggie says, I'll bet, will they help? And he's like, oh, I'm sure they're working on it as we speak. And then, oh, and this was fun because my phone friend actually did comment when I released this episode. Hecubus says, no chemise, Sherlock, as some might say. And Milligan responds, Hecubus, the saying is, because we know what a saying is generally, no blank, Sherlock. And, well, the saying is one that isn't usually granted to a T rating. So my phone friend responded when I shared the episode with her. She'll, I'll say it. No shit, Sherlock. And I talked to her about it recently. She's like, yeah, I do that. I would do that. I'm like, well, yeah, but at least you commented, and that's great. And chemise is a dress hanging straight from the shoulders, popular in the 1920s, or a woman's loose-fitting undergarments or nightgown. Oh, a priest's alb or surplice. A smock. A shirt or nightgown. Okay, so there's a bunch of different meanings for chemise. We need to go over the commentary, because that's the whole point of sharing this stuff. What does the one pen pal have to say? I like Sam's comment, finally. That's the very word for it when it comes to Barnabas. Maggie, referring to Endora as the big witch, is fun, whilst also establishing the hierarchy for the potential final showdown, making it clear that Samantha chose to be different from Angelique, establishes that Angelique's evil deeds are her own choice, whereas Barnabas had his evil forced upon him. Oh, Hecubus, no shabby Sherlock, made me guffaw. More discussion for the Sam and Maggie solve it portion of episode 19. Ah, one pen pal, everyone changes the world. That Maggie says, true. I always imagine that front desk outside diner where Maggie works at the inn. Oh, plus Jason McGee's doom. Plus imagine being a vampire, Barnabas catching up on his reading. Imagine all there is to catch up to. And all the new stuff too. Love Wadsworth's sneaky Sherlock reference. And then, this is mostly a pen pal saying what she liked, I think. Everyone is important. Everyone changes the world. Old capitalist habits die hard. Oh, further recapping. No should be Sherlock. Ha. Now the witches are investigating Angelique while doing needlepoint. Okay, so we're getting a little ahead there. The one fellow. Sam does seem to be a problem solver in a few situations. Scene serves as a good overview of recent past events, because, yeah, Sam and Maggie are going over, this is what happened in the last episode. He picked up on Samantha saying things to be relatable to them. Another pal. More fun reminiscing old times than dealing with the wolf upstairs, indeed, after Willie's glare down with that woman. He is finally happy in some place, slow and writing, and Samantha knowing who and what she is even having, oh, skirt over some issues. Sam Evans is one who likes her for that. She chose to be different for herself and her hubby, make the right decisions for themselves, which makes them good helpers for Collinsport. Yeah, that's true. Another pen pal. I very much enjoyed hearing Maggie's response to the news that Captain Greg finally offered to dance with Endora. It was nice hearing that whole exchange from Sam's perspective. Let's see, I like the flow of the scene, the dialogue bounces back and forth nicely, and I look forward to hearing about what's going on with Chris Jennings and if he is in trouble. Oh, actually, my phone friend, what she said is, I will not hesitate to say the phrase, no shit, Sherlock. That's actually what she said. And O'Sheen, that line of Rogers about the cannery practically running itself made me say, ouch, and think about what Bill would make of that comment. He, I think, would neither approve nor agree with it, so we're going back a little farther. I like the phrase, queer supernatural concoction no one can describe. Once again, Roger's line about being tired of having nothing to do. I can again imagine Bill having some pointed things to say about Roger's work ethic in response to that. Going through the family history and poking fun at each other. Now that does sound like a good Collins family activity. I was very struck by Sam and Maggie, so going to the scene we were just at, Sam and Maggie's voices this time, by how effective and accurate they are. And of course, by the very successful and accurate contrast they have to each other. Great comments. Yeah, I guess Oshin was more thinking about the way the voices sound, which is fine, you know. Actually, Helena was saying that Roger was kind of right about the Kattery does seem to run itself without them. And they still make money in spite of it. Roger needs a life. And Roger dreaming about House of Dark Shadows. That was a very cool aspect of that segment. So yeah, and then we get away from Sam and Maggie Salvador to the switch in the last couple episodes of Samantha and Adora start solving other things. Or at least looking into them. They start investigating, so that is the next scene here in episode 19. So for this scene, we've got the Andora entrance sound effect. Samantha says, "Hello, Mother. Excellent timing." Andora admits, "Captain Gregg knows the cut of his jib in making amends. A good dance is nothing to be shirked at." He's very correct, too. Angelique needs very clear-cut attention. And after all, I need a project. And that's the thing, is that we all know Andora definitely needs a project. Even now, it's been like ages since Bewitched aired. Smith admits, "I don't need one, but it gives me plenty to think about while I do the more at-home things here." And Adora admits, "Naturally, I had time to ask Bathia," meaning Bathia Mates from Dark Shadows. Bathia was not in Bewitched, but I'm mixing worlds, and about Angelique, and all she could propose was, "Get rid of her." And then the last episode, we retroactively saved Bathia Mapes. And Samantha said, "Which isn't an option, Mother. You know, we can't get rid of Angelique." And Andora says, "I know it isn't, but I don't blame Bathia for saying it. We all need to vent our frustrations, especially toward those who did us harm. Now, getting to the heart of the matter, with Angelique, we ignored her." And Samantha said, "True, and that worked for some witches, but not Angelique. So we have to study the problems she caused. Perhaps a classic method could be easier for us in uncovering what happened in between times." I remember years ago, I was thinking, well, do they use crystal balls? And I thought it wouldn't be a clear quartz, it would be like a smoky one. But then I found out, no, they don't use crystal balls, so junk that idea. But you do still have to mix worlds, so some of Angelique's Dark Shadows witchcraft won't blend very well with the Bewitched witchcraft, but you still have to try and get them to talk about it in ways that'll make sense in both worlds. So they have to find out what she did. Initially, I remember recording this, where it was just them, like, flinching and clenching and just reacting, but then I was like, yeah, add some of the Dark Shadows music, like they're actually watching the show. But Andora tells Samantha, "From what I recall, Angelique was more obsessed with a mortal man when Barnabas was mortal before he became a vampire due to her curse than you could ever be." And Samantha smilingly, "Aha, that might work out, wouldn't it?" "How?" Andora asks. "You can take all the irritation you place on my marriage out on Angelique." And that's what I was thinking when I was watching Dark Shadows. And Andora says, "You make it sound like I have a reserve." Which we know she does. She's got a reserve of irritation. And Samantha sighs, "I won't argue with you, Mother. After so many centuries, we can't afford to miss anything, as an ultimatum was given to Angelique a long time ago. And as we found out, it didn't work. Better to get the whole report on her now. Let's take a look. See." So, yeah, and they both admit, yeah, we ignored her, you know, thinking the problem will go away. It hasn't gone away. We got to look at it. So they have to come up with a vision of what happened. "I think this is going to be the grimmest motion picture I've ever witnessed." And Samantha says, "I'll get back with my needlepoint." And they make some jokes about that. "All right, let it loose, Mother." And you hear noise indicating magical view. Milligan. "And now our two witches take their time ascertaining my beloved's," meaning Angelique, "heartfelt destruction of the Collins family in the 1790s and beyond. As you can imagine, every single moment is a cringe. I am sure they will require some fine tea and a good hookah to calm down from it." And then Robert Colbert's Major Woodwind Worries music, and both witches are just flinching. "Oh, ouch, ooh, this is awful. Angelique," says Andora, "has seriously gotten out of hand. Not that we didn't know." Samantha, groaning aghast, "Oh, so vicious. This is like watching a soap opera," which it is. I have got to write this down. And that's the thing, you know, she's like, you know, I can't memorize this. I can't memorize all these things. And Adora asks, Samantha, mother, pause the history. All right, all right. And so I was usually just using a notebook and a pencil and just scribbling to make the sound effect. Samantha says seduction. I'll write that in parentheses. So she's listing all these things Angelique's done just so they can try to figure out like all the craziness that's been going on. And then there's the voodoo doll. And I figured what these witches from Bewitched was going to notice about a voodoo doll. Adora's going to say how antiquated. And Samantha says, yeah, but this was years ago. It was like a long time ago. So a voodoo doll is possible for somebody who's kind of getting into the system. And then the manipulative spell on the little sister, which is Sarah Collins, and Andora announces, now that I simply won't have. And Samantha tells her, yes, are you we thinking of your granddaughter much these days, mother? And Andora admits, absolutely. Samantha lists on the crimes, I guess. Bribe to cure Sarah if this man marries Angelique. A love spell would have been so much easier, Andora tells her. Angelique doesn't do easy, mother. I remember telling so many people, Samantha having that line and just saying, no, Angelique doesn't do easy. She never has in any version of Dark Shadows. Never, never, never. It's like, Samantha hit the nail on the head. And that's mostly like telephone calls. I got that response. And Adora says she certainly doesn't. Now, not the nastiest, but the most disgusting, the love spell she manages to cast on Josette and Barnabas' uncle. Now, there's an episode of Bewitched where this guy Rollo puts love spells on people. So I figured Andora would mention that. I know how it feels to wake up from one of those before it goes as far as that one did, meaning that one went that far with Josette and Jeremiah. Rollo, from Bewitched, and his horrible concoctions could take a lesson from Angelique's gross perversions. At least Jeremiah's ghost went and haunted Angelique after he perished. So, yeah, and that was one of the things a lot of us were satisfied by when Jeremiah came back and was like, dude, you stink. And Angelique was all freaked out by Jeremiah's ghost. It's like, well, what did you expect after, you know, messing with people? Samantha says, and all the while, she's manipulating this servant, Benjamin Stokes, to do her bidding and get all these nasty things accomplished. And Andora, she feels bad for Ben. Poor man, just trying to make a better way for himself in the world. Was there anything that Angelique did that was simply mischievous, Samantha? And Samantha says, oh yes, and this is something we all love about Angelique, I think almost all of us, turning Barnabas' father, Joshua Collins, into a cat. And I gave this to Andora, and she gave it to me. We both agreed, finally, if she didn't have a touch of humor, unlike Jason McGuire, I'd call her completely hopeless. So we're trying to find a way to redeem Angelique because a lot of us, we know she's a villain, but we really like her. And we want to see, is there a way that she can be happy? Because she's got these issues that a lot of us identify with. You know, you want love and you don't understand how it works. So that's what Andora is also trying to figure out for us, pretty much. I'd call her completely hopeless if she didn't have a touch of humor. What about the man's mother, the man meaning Barnabas Collins, Naomi Collins? Samantha says she killed herself after all of this. And Andora says, list that in the tragedies. And the death of his sister. Samantha scribbles listed. And Andora, as bad as she gets on Bewitched, well, I feel like a better person through all of this. Because she's looking at Angelique thinking, yeah, there's some stuff that I felt kind of guilty about, but not now. I can easily say I've scourged one or two romantic flings in my time, but I never turned any into a vampire. Then gone around endlessly cursing the entire family. I mean, yeah, we look at 91 Revival. We didn't get far with the 2004 thing. And 2012, I mean, you just, all versions that you see. I mean, he's just endlessly cursing the family. I mean, this woman that got issues. And I am doing my damnedest to bring her back to reason. Because she's an awesome character if you give her a chance. And they did on the soap opera. Then, like Oisin said, you know, later on they sold her character up the river and just deleted all of her history and had her renewed. And it's like, this sucks. We got to get this woman on track. And frankly, I'm really like, why? They put Laura Parker and David Selby together and it was awesome. Keep going. Let's keep going with that at some point. And you go to those 1897, she wanted that man way more than Barnabas. Then they revamped it or whatever. They recapped it or re-established it as being the opposite way later. It's like, but I've said it before, I'll say it again. And that is the unfortunate nature of American television. It's just gets all screwed up that way.
So, let's see if we can fix this crap. The entire family. She just keeps coming back generation after generation. Oh, and that poor little girl, meaning Sarah Collins, and Dora, you know, she's all, think of it. Here we are in agony, just having watched it. They had to go through all of this. I can't say I'd want to stray my attention too much, but this is what I was talking about when I was so worried about your marriage decision. As you can see, the bound-to-the-ground types get so caught up in what ought to be total trifles. And Samantha says, oh, Mother, I haven't kept to the ground all the time, but I can see what you mean. Now, what are we going to do? Then Adora's like, do? What can we do, my dearest? Go out there and meet the family she keeps trying to dispose of. Angelique. She does all this for the sake of getting a man who doesn't care for her, which means we have to find a tidy rein on her to seize. Then we could pull her out of the strain she keeps badly stew-boiling. In fact, I'm glad Captain Greg brought her to our attention. I was getting a little bored, and we all know Andorra needed a project. She really, even now, you know, it's like, oh gosh, 50, 60, 70 years later. I don't even know. And then, now this is the thing, you know, we were talking about a lot of fans, like the people I got contact with. Samantha just nails this. And you know what, Mother? That curse is as flimsy as it can get. Anyone who loves Barnabas Collins will automatically die. If that included her too, meaning Angelique, she couldn't have carried on so far. There are too many contradictions with a curse like that. Anna Dorset, yes, it was too broad. Most mortals die naturally, so it loses its threat in the mere pronouncement. Whatever she intended wouldn't have worked. So, as it turns out, he becomes a vampire, which would be as close as it gets to making sense. So, I think I wrestled with what they might say and how I interpreted it and how others saw it, where it's like, how does this make sense? How does that make sense? Let's give it to the Bewitched gals and see what sense they make, and here we are. Samantha says, she keeps trying with her attempts during modern times. The intention is still there. Yes, the dream curse, marrying Roger Collins just to get into the house again, that's where we see it all starts to fall apart on her. True, the Collins started getting better help from outsiders. Now, this is where the pit enters. So they're not talking about original Dark Shadows anymore. They're talking about what I've put together as a relief series. They were wise to embrace that. Quite so, the Collins look to be very akin to people we already socialize with, minus the excessive dramatics. It makes sense we were approached, daughter. Samantha says, agreed. The question is, where is Angelique now? And Dora admits, I took a look into that fiasco. After their bio-exorcist, meaning Beetle just obliterated her, she was flung into the ethers. As of now, I believe she is conjuring a way to get out of it. Samantha says, oh good, let's take a look at that. Very well, says Andorra. So, there's more magical noises, and Andorra says, oh dear, it doesn't look pretty. That's a great deal of hellacious fire and brimstone, and Samantha asks, isn't it? Oh, one pen pal, more guffaws after Andorra and Samantha have conjured up the vision of the 1790s events at Collinwood, and Andorra says, think of it, here we are in agony, just having watched it. I love Andorra and Samantha's very matter-of-fact, witchy discussion. So for this scene, Hidden Object says, with Andorra and Samantha, really felt and understood the frustration of being harassed for choosing to be a housewife. I laughed when Samantha said, this is like watching a soap opera. It's so true that people tend to look at others' misdeeds to comfort themselves about their own. Yeah, it's good. Another pen pal. I loved that little intro-outro music you chose when the scene was introduced and at the end of the scene. It sounded like a harp, and it fits well with the overall tone as I attribute it to something mystical. Yay. I'm glad that Samantha has some help from Andorra to figure out what's going on with Angelique. I'm wondering if they'll both confront Angelique or if it will only be Samantha. Either way, I love the scene, and I'm happy for Samantha that she has some extra help now. I'm with Samantha on this. Whenever I need to list out things, I write them down. It's easier for me to remember that way. Whoa, Angelique managed to orchestrate a lot of chaos on the Collins family. The list kept going and going. I like how the reactions to each of the things Samantha listed were rather sarcastic while also being sympathetic. I can't wait to hear how Samantha will confront Angelique. Overall, I enjoyed hearing this scene. That was scary. So another pen pal. Angelique needs clear-cut attention, and I need a project. So if Angelique isn't to be rid of by the witches, I see trouble. Ignoring her failed, so now to study her and see how to deal with her then. Ah, Samantha, you can take out all your frustration on my marriage and put it towards her. This is awful, and we know how bad Angelique has gotten. Pause the history, mother, laugh out loud. Using a voodoo doll is so antiquated, laugh out loud. Spell after spell Angelique did, and then Stokes being manipulated for her bidding, meaning Ben Stokes, not Professor, turning Barnabas' dad into a cat was the one thing that was mischievous, and no wonder everyone is off. Oh dear, lots of fire and brimstone. So that's going into the next thing. And the chap. Oh, because, you know, they're, Samantha and Adora are, like, looking at what Angelique did. So he says, every moment is a cringe, listing off the things Angelique has done for those who probably don't remember from season one. Turning the father into a cat indeed was humorous. Yes, normal flings don't involve turning people into animals. They only involve herpes. They're like people we already associate with, minus the excessive dramatics. And Dora's in for quite an epiphany. Oh, and Guiding Light. Love the Tom Witchery play on words. Tomfoolery. I'm loving the masterminding of revenge going on here. Look out, Angelique. It's like watching a soap opera. Too funny and so accurate. What a massive laundry list of transgressions. Hilarious that Angelique's only redeeming quality was turning someone into a cat. Love it. And another pen pal. Was there anything that Angelique did that was simply mischievous? Because I guess mischievous is permitted? Turning a guy into a cat, and good because without humor, she'd be hopeless. And this unhealthy obsession with a love interest, unquote, is why Andorra was so worried about Sam, meaning Samantha, getting married. The curse does not meet the witch's approval as it is illogically applied. Nice satanic summoning. Oh, because that comes later. From Helena, yes, Andorra, you do have a reserve when it comes to Darren. Bless our broken circle. Oh, I just thought about this. Why didn't Angelique use the love spell on Barnabas? Well, Angelique loved Barnabas, but she kept dying and coming back. Oh yeah, then there was the music when I was getting to the next scene. The people, you know, one of the guys involved in that, the music that I used. Thank you for choosing Planchette Poets Decay for your ambient and incidental audio needs. If you need something really gross, I recommend a jam called Pork Noodles. It's disgusting, really, really gross. It may make your listeners vomit. That is what the public wants, though, because it shows that they are creative as well, even if it is simply vomit that they are creating. The show sounds like it's moving along nicely. Pretty cool, because I showed him, you know, this is how I used your music. Pretty cool. Not much news over here, except when he put this together in 2019. Except my neighbor called me Bill. She definitely hasn't been going through my mail. I guess I could try being Bill for a while. Why not? Warren came back for episode 19. Like the hidden history on Samantha and Doran's, and Samantha, you do them so well. Talk about the crimes of Angelique. I like coming back to the dream curse. Mentioning Nicholas Blair, Beetlejuice, and Angelique, Happy Hour in Hell, Diablos, and Dominions. I like how you portray them, Voldemort. Sounds like a 80s rock group or rock club, Studio 54. Cool. You were inspired by TV, a Nicholas Blair discipline. Disc jockey, haha, barista, okay. And that kind of leads us on to the next scene to discuss with all y'all. Man, yeah, this is... I put it up in places where I'm just like, I cannot believe this made it past the 1960 censors, but it did. I mean, it was really, for that television, as satanic as you could get. I just, again, it's another show of, you know, I have a great Ghost of Mrs. Mira scene. Why does it get, like, balanced out with this super dark stuff? But, I mean, oh, man. And, you know, and she does. It blows my mind. Prince of Fire. I call upon... This is verbatim for freaking Dark Shadows. I'm not kidding you. The flame to summon you. I call out all the dark creatures of nature to summon me to you. Prince of Fire, hear me as I call to you. I summon you in the name of the seven plagues, in the name of the charred and blackened stars that reigned at my beginnings. I mean, you can enjoy the original episode, or my original episode with me just getting into it. I'm just going to read it just bland right now. To rise out of the darkness of the earth, I call you forth from the mouth of the dragon and the beast and of the false prophet. Now, in the original, she is saying this through some black candle flames or something, but in my Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, she's in the void. Because Beetlejuice put her there, and she's doing this incantation to get to Diablos, Cafe Diablos, or whatever it is. hell in so many words. From the mouth of the dragon and of the beast and of the false prophet, I call you forth from the subterranean rivers of blood, from the smoke of torment, which rises forever and ever. It's as satanic as you could get without saying the name Satan or devil or anything.
Man.
And who owns ABC now? Wasn't it Disney? It's just, oh man.
Oh my gosh.
In the name of every evil spirit, evil, which I'm sure Vilgen loves, and obedient only to you, I evoke you, appear to me now, now, no, don't destroy me, I must reach you, I evoke you, appear to me now, now, no, no, don't destroy me, I must reach you, you can't destroy me, no, ah, you know, she's screaming, and I remember Guiding Light, you know, there was some stuff that I did, you know, where there was, like, evil stuff, and she was like, hey, you know, it was, like, kind of creeping me out, and I was like, okay, we're gonna go as lounge as we can, I'm gonna do Let's Dance, karaoke version, David Bowie, let's just do it. Then we get the cliffhanger music, tingling foom poof noise, and karaoke version of Let's Dance by Bowie. And part of the fun of that, when she's moving into Cafe Diablos, she's screaming, and the Let's Dance music, as she's screaming, is also sort of screaming in the, like the three ahs. That was very intentional, and I remember making a friend bust up when I explained it to her. And yeah. So the point of that was she's screaming as the three ahs from Let's Dance are showing up too. And Diablos is, he's barista, bartender, girlfriend. Angelic's Dark Lord. I mean, she's confused. And he's not the party animal, but he's definitely the party host. You have summoned yourself to me. I remember just so many times going through all these lines and lowering the pitch on Diablos. Yes. Oh, my dear. It's happy hour. Because I watched those episodes of Dark Shadows with Diablos, you know, and I'm just thinking, is this a cafe, a Chinese restaurant? This guy looks like he's standing at a bar ready to serve drinks. He really did. And, gosh, I remember the old fartlip days and, you know, people putting up pictures of Diablos and Nicholas Blair and in that sequence and just going, less cleaner than my house. Oh, man. It did. It just, oh. Poor Angelique just trying to figure out this. I didn't realize, you know, that it was happy hour. It livens the place, that's for certain. So they go through, it's like, who brought you to this sad state of near obliteration, Angelique? And Angelique says, he who must not be named... Lisa, my mom, so many people voted for this joke. And he asked, what? Who? Voldemort? You know, that's like a Harry Potter joke. And she's like, no, no, truly, you can't say his name, meaning Beetlejuice. If you say it, he pops out of nowhere whispering Alpha Orionis, because that's like the constellation or whatever. And Diablo says, oh, say no more, Icabrede. Now, you know, you are one of my favorite servants. Thank you, Dark Lord, she says. Think nothing of it. Who has made this mockery of you? Nicholas, Nicholas. And he has fallen prey to stupefaction. So it's not like... In the original Dark Shadows, it was because he fell in love with Maggie Evans. So it was like, oh, well, you know, he's not as satanic as you would like. He fell in love with a mortal. He loves, like, it's, like, messed up. But so she's coming down on him to Diablos for incompetence. That's basically it. And so there's just a lot of jokes in between, and but he wants to serve drinks. He's just so down with this happy hour thing. So this incompetence, and Diablos is not happy with that. And he says, I was concerned who was the inferior between you and he anyway. I suppose I'll have to draw him down here. But why now, when we're just having our drinks? Well, if you wish to waste, master, she says, no, no. I know well enough the weight of needless ceremony might be excessive, that it will take forever anyway. And he snaps his finger and it's like, that'll take him a half hour to get him here. So then we go with more stuff. And that's the thing. Remember in, I think, episode 7, Milligan and Hecubus were totally disappointed, like my husband and I when we were watching the original series with Nicholas Blair. Like, oh, is it Satan? No, he's just some schmo. And we were so disappointed, so we figured Milligan and Hecubus would be the same way. They're so disappointed in Nicholas Blair. So they are happy to be hosting and envisioning this downfall of Nicholas Blair to Diablos, the Dark Lord. So Nicholas is weirded out that he's been called down to hellaciousness. And it's like, dude, you were incompetent. Collinsport should be easy. He's like, no, you don't understand. It's like all in line down there and stuff. And it's like, well, you know, but you had some prowess, but you kind of lost it. So choose for yourself. What do you want to suffer while you regain your powers? You know, it's like, what do you want to suffer down here? And He comes up with some stuff that Diabolus is not impressed by. Diabolus says, what to do with your incompetence? And Nicholas admits, I'm keen to guess. Try me. Your parlor tricks didn't work up there, and I doubt they will work well down here. You require a discipline of a practice that will keep you in check for our future needs. And Nicholas comes up with about 3 really bad things. And then he says, Diabolus says, you're going to be a busboy. And that horrifies Nicholas Blair, and he screams, no! And that is the thing that gets Hegubus and Milligan cheering and happy, because they're so... They don't like Nicholas. They're just like, oh, you're the cheap version. Like, we didn't want the cheap version. We're the cheap version. We want the good version, and you're just as cheap as us, or worse. So, they weren't happy. So they were happy to see the downfall of Nicholas Blair becoming a busboy in Diabolus Cafe, or bar, or whatever it is. And this is the point at which Endora and Samantha are watching all this and going, oh my gosh, are these people serious? Yes, they are. And that is what is scary. So they're just, hemming and hawing. And Endora says, I always said those who dabbled in the ideology of absolute evil were surreal. And Samantha adds, caked with delusions of grandeur. More than any of us, Endora says. This Blair really believes in all that stuff, Samantha says. Endora says, so does Diabolus. And as far as I can determine, he's a barrister, meaning I think like a lawyer, who somehow became a mere barista, meaning, you know, somebody who serves drinks, for goodness sake. Samantha's sighing with remorse. Can we ever get Angelique out of that? Because it's like, yeah, she's mixed up with the riffraff for sure. We have just seen it with our own eyes. And Endora says, oh, we can, but slowly, my dear. She's almost as far gone as those two. And Samantha asks, now we have to determine where will she pop up next. And if you're a fan of Dark Shadows, you know it's going to be 1897. You know, Samantha, there is something, says Endora, about these Collinsport creatures I'm coming to realize. They tend to do a little dancing through time. Samantha says, oh, well, that can jumble up all sorts of things. No wonder they manage to have more problems than we do. And that's the thing, you know, Dark Shadows has continuity flaws. Go to the Bewitched Continuum book. I have a copy of that. Oh, man, it is just amazing what the authors of that try to do to make it all make sense. It is amazing. If any continuity is more flawed than Dark Shadows, it is Bewitched. It's troublesome, you know, and it's not like, I'm not saying, oh, bad. I mean, you're dealing with making a TV show for North American television and making it as fast as you can. It's just nuts. So yeah, I mean, and also when the medium was kind of new, I mean, they just got color. They just got color moving pictures for television. So, I mean, it's pretty young. So, yeah, and this, building the scripts and doing it so fast, and what ideas are we working with? Yeah, I mean, I go back to David Selby going to dinner with one of the writers, and what do you have for my character next week? The writer says, I don't know. Ask me next week. That's how fast they were pumping this stuff out. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of continuity flaws. And that's what I got to work with. And that's why I was saying in another retrospective, this is what the original idea of Barnabas was. They changed it because people liked the character, so they had to redeem him and make all this stuff crazier, and then they started redoing all this stuff, and that's why Barnabas Collins confuses so many people. Because originally, he was going to be somebody you did not remember at all. Okay? And then he was loved so dearly, they reconjured what his character was and all the stuff with Josette. I mean, and that's why we got 91 Revival, we got 2004 WB unaired pilot, the 2012 film, House of Dark Shadows. I mean, this is all just multiple reinventions based on multiple books. And that's why I say, you know, I gotta deal with what we're working with. And if you don't know the trivia, you're up the creek. So, and with all the other shows too, you know, I'm just working my butt off. So going back to Samantha and Endora here, and what we got in episode 19, Happy Hour in Hell. They're realizing, yeah, there's stuff with time travel, because Bewitched had time travel too. Endora says, Angelique returns to the Great House again. For her, it will be the future, but it will also be in Collinsport's past, which is what we ought to investigate next. And Samantha tells her, by Jingo Mother, you've got it. So, not this episode, but a later one, they'll look into 1897. Oh. I don't even think I released that yet at all. I think I chatted it out with Oshin, just like, man, what is that and what is that? I mean, because they go through 1897 in almost the same way as they go through the 1790s in this one, where it's like this and this and this and this and this. Trying to figure out, like, okay, we've got to interrupt her at some point. So, now, oh, we got to get to what everybody says about this stuff. Hopefully, Oh my gosh, it's gonna suck so much. Little one pen pal. Angelique conjuring up Satan while trapped in the ethers, and their greeting is fabulous in many ways. Girlfriend, Dark Lord. It makes Satan sound like a bit of a joker. An idea firmly established during their exchange. I was being dramatic. You know the rules. That's my title, don't wear it out. Ha 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 ha, heart. The more I listen, the more I think I'd enjoy a happy hour tipple with this Dark Lord.
Okay, so and with Helena when she was still part of the whole thing.
Let's see, I'm already in picture Angelique invoking now. Yes, destroy her. Voldemort, well, I guess getting her drink at happy hour is okay, too. Laughing face. I see the Dark Lord wearing that Hawaiian shirt with a towel over his shoulder and wearing a bar apron. I want to know about Natalie Dupre's lovers, too. Oh man, Nicholas could be a good DJ. Busboy, the dreaded job that dear old Nicholas had avoided, and now snicker. And for O'Sheen, great comments by our witchy ladies about Angelique's escapades. That's going to be a several-part miniseries. I have to go write this down. Fun putting your own experiences researching Dark Shadows into what the ladies are doing. If she didn't have a touch of humor, I'd call her completely hopeless. Yes. That's a good evocation of Angelique. Very good line. Mortals automatically die. You did a great job with Angelique's voice and her conjuring. It was as accurately ridiculous as ever with all the charred and darkened stars that rained at my beginning nonsense. I don't remember right now in what context the line girlfriend was used, but I know that whatever it was, I enjoyed it. Great conversation here. Don't contradict me. How can I tell you what happened? I was being dramatic. One pen pal was saying, remember censoring? Wow, nothing is censored these days. A shame. A lot of it should be. I hate that kids are growing up to this as commonplace. Immune to war and suffering and romance. Where is the world going to? Scary thought, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm not sure. But she was saying, happy or in hell. Ha, funny. Hysterical concept. Ha ha, Voldemort. He who must not be named. Don't contradict me. Tee. I like the echo in Bad Boys Diabolus' voice, or I should say the bass in his voice. Oh yeah, Egad was a take on Oh God, wasn't it? A busboy, oh you are evil, tee hee hee. Barrister to barista, ha. Baristas equal much better. And then Melissa commented, hilarious with Bowie's Let's Dance in the background as Happy Hour unfolds. Angelique Happy Hour enhances the plays. Laugh out loud, Diabolos, Nicky Boy reference, the big chorus of Nicholas, Diabolos condemning Nick to a fiery term as a busboy. What a riot. The way you weave in Cobert's music of shock and horror. Another pen pal. How? Ha, it's funny when Blair has to apologize for saying egad, and that his punishment is to work as a busboy. Oh, and then another pen pal. In the name of every evil dragons and dark stars, I command you to show yourself, and I will be your minion. Always, do not destroy me. Then David Bowie's song hits. And his dominion graces our presence. It's happy hour, dear. It livens up the place, that's for certain. Harry Potter, Voldemort, Beetlejuice, Nicholas has fallen prey to stupefaction. Loved the banter, let's dance. What is propelling me downward? I am, you nitwit. Don't wear it out. My title, that is. Enlightenment, egads. Language, Blair. I do forgive you. Spare me your stupid brass band plights. Disc jockey, steam operator. No, salad. Wow, a fiery term as a busboy. Laugh out loud. Caked with delusions of grandeur. Diabolos was a barrister, now a barista. So much for evil. To put her in the present day, but I will be in the distant past. Really, for her in the mind. I loved how over-the-top Samantha and Dora were when discussing what they should do about Angelique. I also thought it was a great summation of the past events. I also thought the comment about Diabolos seeming more like a barista was a nice touch. I got a kick out of hearing about the happy hour in hell. I sure wasn't expecting that, especially with the very dark incantation that precedes it. That was sure a fun bit to hear. I also liked how well-versed Diabolos' pop culture knowledge is. That was great hearing Nicholas listing off all the things he could do, only to be demoted to busboy. Diabolos sure has a sense of humor when it comes to disciplining people. I really enjoyed listening to both parts 6 and 7. They were a fun little detour from the rest of the story.
And now we have got the Ghost of Mrs. Mirror scene.
Oh, and I got some help from Ghost of Mrs. Mirror fans because there was, what is that, turning Carolyn Stoddard is saying.
That's Greg Road, not Bay Road, Greg Road, because two writers had come up, you know, two fanfiction writers come up with how to make the continuity make sense, because I guess in an episode it's called Bay Road and another one's called Greg Road, so the two writers decided, let's have it turn a certain way and it changes the name. So I definitely use that as, you know, Melgan says, we now find our Carolyn starter driving out to meet with Carolyn Muir in the fascinating perplexity of discovering what odd family secrets Elizabeth Stoddard may have provided Mrs. Muir with in Schooner Bay. So Carolyn is figuring out how to get there, and Captain Greg echoing when Carolyn Stoddard is saying, got it, and Greg is echoing voice, do you, Miss Stoddard? Carolyn Stoddard says, helping me is one thing, Captain Greg, but teasing me is another. And Captain Greg tells her, I promise I am doing the former, Miss Stoddard. So I take also this bit from a Ghost of Mrs. Muir episode where Jonathan uses an old-fashioned phrase and Greg responds with a 60s one. So Carolyn Stoddard says, thank you, Captain. I think I know my way. We're all shipshape and Bristol fashion here. And Greg says, groovy. So it's that kind of thing. So I was taking direct from Ghost of Mrs. Muir, Jonathan, and Captain Greg. Then she parks the car. Oh, yeah, then we got Martha again. Oh, Miss Stoddard, how lovely to see you. Carolyn Stoddard says, goodness, Martha, sounds like I'm a happier outcome than what you were expecting, and this was mainly for my husband. Well, you were. I was glad you weren't the landlord. That Claymore might as well be on a network game show for all we care. Please come in. So, yeah, that was, because if you remember from the interview with Oisin Dubois, I said, you know, Charles Nelson Reilly, when he was playing, being possessed by Captain Greg, he could be kind of alluring, and, like, he could act, and my husband was saying to everybody in the room, yeah, he's not just this guy on 70s game shows. And I really was impressed at the time. I was like, whoa, you know, like, yeah, he can do it. And I say that as somebody who was trying and trying just to do this kind of thing, to tell stories and do audiobooks. So I never thought that I could do something this good, you know, more or less. So when I get the compliments, it's like, I'm just trying my best to make this story as good as I can, because there was no way I was going to get the help from enough people and sustain the help with a lot of people playing different roles and whatever we thought we could conjure 20 years ago.
So it's just trying to do the best that I can do myself.
And Carolyn Stoddard says, thank you, Martha. Looks like I'm well and welcomed at Gull Cottage. And Martha says, all's well that chastens us to better considerations, Miss Stoddard. I was just about to pick the children up from school. Sometimes they lose their way. Carolyn admits I did that myself. Mrs. Muir's coming down, she says, and I'm off. Yeah, so out the door she goes. Mrs. Muir comes down. Oh, Carolyn, you're here. Yes, I got your letter. I'm so relieved. Your mother was here to see me. So this is me retroactively fixing what I got wrong at 17. Elizabeth Collins Stoddard was here, Carolyn Stoddard asked. Mrs. Muir, yes, with that cousin Lily. Was that her name? I figured, yeah, if they were together, then Lily would show up too. Yes, that's her. And that she amused Martha in the kitchen, kept her occupied with her own kitchen ideas. Martha was befuddled at first and then extremely amused by her. So, I mean, yeah, and it's funny because I haven't looked at this in a long time, but yeah, there's Lily Munster basically redesigned to look like Yvonne DiCarlo and hanging out with Martha from The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. I mean, that is worth a chapter somewhere. I don't know if I'll ever make a drabble of it. I don't know.
Who knows? And it's just, there's so many good ideas when you mix all these worlds together.
So they get comfortable in the parlor. There's the captain, his portrait staring. And if Sam Evans hadn't cleaned his portrait, yeah, it's always good. Obviously, Mrs. Muir, how did all this come to be? My stopping by as you asked me. And Mrs. Muir, it's complicated to say the least. It's unusual for me to be involved with such noble born types or those of exemplary class.
Which is totally different if you've read the Ghost of Mrs. Muir novel now that I have. It's like, yeah, it's a little bit, yeah, definitely, like, this is a different Mrs. Muir.
But Carolyn, you know, she's grown up at Collinwood, so she's like, the Carlins were hardly that. I mean, she doesn't think of herself as noble-born in any capacity. So it's a matter of money, says Mrs. Muir. And then, I couldn't think of anything but some Robert Farnan music. I figured that would actually fit with the Ghost of Mrs. Muir. I'm always looking for the right stuff for that show. But Mrs. Muir is saying one mother would confide in another. But Carolyn Stoddard is saying that maybe it's familial obligation. Mrs. Muir is saying, I suppose it is. She wanted most of all to have you understand her and for you to know that she loves you.
And that was a thing that, you know, in 17, Carolyn was the most worried about. I figured if I did fix this retroactively, it would be okay that Elizabeth didn't say much. Because if you fix it retroactively, Elizabeth's daughter knows that she's already dealt with it, so you don't have to worry about what came before.
Because that's in the mind of the character when you fixed it. And Mrs. Muir is saying, I haven't the foggiest notion of who this Victoria is. But what I do know, and I figured she would, because I've seen this a lot too, the name comes up in a lot of war stories. The name represents victory, and many children in times of war are named after the stands of victory.
So you got Victor or Victoria. That's what a lot of kids will get named in times of war.
And Carolyn asks, are they? And Mrs. Muir says, yes, the pattern repeats quite often. And from what I was told, Victoria was a natural name for the young lady who might be your half-sister, as she was conceived during the Second World War. Carolyn Stoddard is very relieved. Undoubtedly, Mrs. Muir, all of this is making so much more sense than I'm used to hearing.
And that's the thing about The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, is a lot of times, because I'm trying to readjust everything so it does make sense, so some of the stuff in Dark Shadows that frustrates us will be worked out. So quite a few times in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows radio drama, you will hear a character saying, this is so weird because it's making sense now. It's all making sense now. And that's the thing about us humans, is that we really thrive on problem solving and teamwork. That is the thing that gets us. Because it's what's kept us going so long. I mean, look at our history. It's really group stuff. And again, you know, it's so funny because there's so many group things that I love. There's a lot of Star Trek crews that I'm quite, you know, I look up to. But then there's also Monty Python, Beatles, Monkees, those groups, or the Spice Girls. And it's like they try to make a diversity of themselves fit and work and do stuff. And a lot of rock groups are like that. A lot of pop groups are like that. You know, they try to put that out there. Comedy troops too, like the Kids in the Hall as well. But then there's also Star Trek stuff. Groups of human beings working together to create things or to solve things. So with The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, what you have is multiple layers of teams interacting and working together and intersecting. And yeah, I think that is why it cured one of my ailments. I really feel strongly about this. When you think about it, because humans thrive on teamwork, when I look back at what was plaguing me, it was so many things going wrong. But as I'm healing all of these soap opera characters, you've got all this data on them. And I grew up with all this data on all these other shows and movies and reestablished that. So yeah, it would make sense that certain emotional debilitations would be healed when you just get into these roles and you absorb and reabsorb this stuff and get it working so well. I mean, it really makes a lot of sense.
I am not sure where I was, but hopefully that helped a lot of people if you are looking for an answer to psychological or emotional difficulties. Because we got a lot of those going on now with what's going on with big tech and everything. And we had some of it before with just all the distractions with the other tech.
So, going back to solving this particular problem of Elizabeth Stoddard, coming to Carolyn Muir and confessing, hey, can you tell my daughter this? Because I don't think I'm going to have time. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to put this together so that Carolyn Muir, Mrs. Muir, will have to confess, like, your mother's demeanor truly stunned me. Which, yeah, Elizabeth's daughter, Joan Bennett, I mean, she was pretty stunning. She holds so much over her worries and her love for Collinwood and for you. It was like having a piece of magic before me, though a little different from the captain's magic, you understand. And Carolyn's kind of tripped out, you know, Carolyn's daughter. Really, what else did she say? Oh, I wish I could replay that bold way she has of speaking. That's the thing that's so fun about Elizabeth Stoddard. She really, I mean, she's just bold.
She told me, Mrs. Muir, and I did so good. Like, I mean, I scared myself doing Hope Lange as Mrs. Muir, doing an impression of Elizabeth, Joan Bennett as Elizabeth. Mrs. Muir, my daughter has found a certain friendship with you, and I hope you won't think it too forward of me to explain my considerations to her. A man attracted me once in my youth, and I was simply swept away, not realizing the consequences it would hold for me now. And the daughter of Elizabeth Stoddard, warmly smiling, that sounds like mother. Yeah, it's all just being slowly absorbed. Good. It made me feel that confidences in households which hold less monetary wealth are spared the worry of disclosing premarital affairs, said Mrs. Muir. Even if a particular premarital affair means great joy for the two involved. So she's being told all this stuff from Elizabeth Stoddard, but she reflects, hey, when you don't have to be a stalwart pedestal or a stalwart
statuesque representation of your world, you can kind of kick back and not worry about premarital affairs. But Carolyn Stoddard is saying, so Mother did have one, a premarital affair. And Mrs. Muir's like, well, I suppose she did after so much talk and planning have been made out of it now. And they both laugh with relief. And so Carolyn asks, but why does she want to tell you about it? Was it simply because you and I are friends now? And Mrs. Muir admits, I suppose she wanted you to be told about it by someone who is a mother and a mother of two children instead of one. And I just thought that was so perfect. I was dying for somebody to talk to me about it who knows both shows. Nobody has so far as I can remember. We'll go through the commentary. But yeah, I just, when it came out, it was like, it was another one of those moments where it's the characters who are more in control. Like, they know what's going to come up before I do. And part of that is just having that much understanding of the different stories interweaving together in your mind, I'm sure. Because, you know, like, I think about when I look up to Vladimir Nabokov, if I'm getting, I'm mispronouncing it, VN. And he would always be so adamant about, I know exactly what I'm going to write down. Well, honey, some of us don't, and one of the reasons we don't is that we can't see so well exactly what is going in all of our minds. There was just some prowess that he had. For me, you know, I am not sure of how all this happens, but the journey is wonderful. There's something going on unconsciously, but you get used to dealing with it as kind of an unconscious and then conscious journey. What surprises are going to come? And that's what Mrs. Muir did for me in this instance. Because I'm gathering all of this trivia and then putting the pieces together. What's going to happen? Same thing happens with so many of the other fandoms. And that's why I'm like, don't distract me. I want to work on the pit. Don't say, look at this, look at that. I got the pit. You know, that is enough. I don't need to add more. Unless some other show can help with another problem. Let's just live this thing. Come on. That's one of the things that Mrs. Muir has been very good at teaching me about how all of this is coming together, is that she had this interaction, you know, and this is me fixing past stuff with Elizabeth Stoddard. But yeah, it was fabulous. I mean, she touches on this thing. Two children instead of one, Elizabeth Stoddard, the possibility of Victoria also being a daughter, two children instead of one. So yeah, Carolyn Muir is gonna know, and she'll be able to relate it to Carolyn Stoddard. And Carolyn asked, Mrs. Muir, now that you've told me this, what on earth do I have to offer you? And then she says, oh, maybe you should start calling me Carolyn. And Carolyn's daughter's like, oh, I don't know if I get used to that. And so then Mrs. Muir says, then use it on occasion, like when you need more emphasis in our talks. And Carolyn Stoddard says, now that I can handle, because it would make sense. You know, she'll, to get Mrs. Muir's attention, she would call her Carolyn by first name. But most of the time, like everyone else on the show, or the movie, or the book, that her name is Mrs. Muir. And it's in the title. And then she's also reminding her, or telling her, like, hey, you're in charge. And it feels kind of silly now when I look at this, but it's probably good for Carolyn Stoddard to be reminded, hey, you're in charge. Like, because there's stuff in the first year where she's in charge, too. Where Elizabeth is all kind of wiped out, and Roger's not in charge. But again, Carolyn gets surprised. And then Mrs. Muir is also surprised. It's like, I doubt a lone widow writer in a township would be allowed to convey the passing of the scepter in so many words of such a grand estate as Collinwood. And Carolyn, knowing her family, being a little slapdash, oh, I don't know. That's just wonderful. When Milligan says, the world of awesome blondes never seems to end. Oh gosh, we've got so much more to do. The one pen pal says, the world of awesome blondes never seems to end. Now that you could print on a t-shirt. For that scene, hidden objects, thoughts. I enjoyed hearing Mrs. Muir and Carolyn Stoddard's friendship grow. It's so true that we may know deep down that we are loved, but we need to hear it. It was neat to hear how Elizabeth was growing. I hope at some point she will talk freely with her daughter instead of by proxy. Oh, and another pen pal. Captain Greg seems like the sort to tease someone like Carolyn Stoddard. It was also nice to have the echo effect as if his voice is coming from everywhere at once. It's also fun hearing the captain use 60 slang. It was nice having Mrs. Muir go over her experience with Elizabeth Stoddard, and I'm glad it was able to soothe some of Carolyn Stoddard's concerns. I really like the change of pace with the script, too. Not that I don't enjoy the audio versions, it's just that I really like seeing behind the scenes of media in production.
Mrs. Muir comes off as being very warm and comforting, even just by reading the script. I really think that she is the best choice to talk to Carolyn Stoddard about everything going on with Elizabeth. She's the mother figure that Carolyn Stoddard needs at the moment, and it's nice to see that she's encouraging Carolyn on how to proceed. I know if a character is written well, if their personality is really able to be recognized, you did a fantastic job writing her character. She's still very much in the same vein as the TV show, which is really good, and you're able to create your own story.
Another pen pal. I think it's official. Captain Greg is my favorite supporting character. And here I thought most Victorias were named after the Queen, but the Victory thing makes sense, especially pre the Victorian era. The world of awesome blondes never seems to end.
Indeed.
And another pen pal. You do the ghostly voice, Captain Greg, very well. I like the effects. All's well that chastens us to better conditions. That's from Martha. Excellent phrase. I love watching Lily in her Munster kitchen. I love the Munster kitchen and the house. Okay, so she didn't quite get that it was Martha. I like that they talked about class and Carolyn laughed at being considered high class. But you know, in the ghost world, all is the same, including on Earth. Those places ghosts inhabit supersedes earthly interests. Funny the Victoria Victory name. Fun that Elizabeth left Carolyn in charge. I bet Roger loved that. Oh, Oisin, Martha's voice is great. It is exactly her. I really appreciated the line about so much more sense than I'm used to hearing. And from Warren, I like Carolyn Stoddard and Mrs. Muir and Captain Greg. Elements Carolyn Stoddard and Mrs. Muir understanding fit well.
And then a couple more scenes. One will be shorter, so hopefully I'm going to wrap this up.
So Lily Munster on the boat, the RMS Queen Elizabeth, says that to Elizabeth she's getting an indication. Elizabeth decides she should look for the ghost of Bill, packing up her troubles, setting forth. And Lily says not troubles, Lizzie hopes. So she steps out where she's going to meet the ghost of Bill Malloy. Elizabeth says, yes, Bill, I'm coming to terms with speaking to those of our friends in the afterlife. And Bill says, I'm honored that you can, but with you, I always was honored when I could spend time with you. And Elizabeth, as she says, Bill, you were fond of me, weren't you? Likely so fond you never would credit it to be true, says Bill. Elizabeth admits, I would now. You were the best man to ever work and care for Collins Enterprises. Not to mention our family, too. I'm sure that was consulted with Oisin about. And Bill says, happy to find out you knew about me caring. In a way, maybe you always did, but to hear you say it out loud means more. Bill says, now that fellow you loved in New Brunswick. Oh, him. That's why we are all here, Liz, says Bill, and don't I know it. And Bill says, you were young, Liz. I often suspected something happened, but it was only once I reached this other side that the answers came to me. You met him on that Maritimes vacation with your cousin Lily. Somehow, the war overseas didn't worry anyone, as we in the United States like to express, and from what I know, we did. We're staying out of it. Because we were always like, you know, like, I think it was a matter of being shattered by World War One. We're staying out of it. They're going crazy again. No. And then, yeah. And as Elizabeth says, yes, we were staying out of it when we hardly could. Bill says, and it was no mystery to me why her name was Victoria. Elizabeth says, Leslie and I had no qualms about what to name her. And we already learned why with Mrs. Muir's, you know, discussion with Carolyn Stoddard in the previous scene. So that's good, you know, as we go forward in this episode. Bill says, as her note said, her name is Victoria. I cannot take care of her, which I consulted with Oisin about and possibly others. Like, what did the note say? Elizabeth admits, and I couldn't, Bill. Bill says, I know you couldn't. I saw what you were up against, and I want to help you find the answers. We're going to England, aren't we? Meaning, that's where the boat's going. So, Elizabeth says, we are. Meaning, her and Lily. You know, it's like, are you coming along, dude? Bill says, it's got a lot of ghosts, that place. England. And Elizabeth said, more than most, perhaps. Bill says, you want to help her? And Elizabeth says, and a friend, yes. And Bill, smilingly, I am both, aren't I, Liz? Bill Malloy, what can I tell you? If it wasn't for all these guidances and misguidances, then my falling for Paul once upon a time, you know who I would have wanted, don't you? And this mainly was for Oisin, because she felt it, and I said, it is possible, you know. Is it canon? I don't know. But from their relationship that I saw when I got to know the first year better, it's possible. It's possible. So I have Elizabeth say, you, Bill, I would have chosen you.
And Liz, ghosts like me don't sleep so well usually, but I think tonight I will sleep more soundly than I ever have since I died. And that kind of goes back to 15, where Willie asked Sarah, do you dream? So there's this idea, like, do ghosts sleep? We don't know. But Sarah kind of gives Willie that idea, and here is Bill saying, ghosts don't sleep so well, so it's possible. And then Elizabeth asks him the next night, you're going to tell me all about what happened and how you died. Because she still doesn't know about the whole Matthew Morgan stuff. Bill wants to tell her, and she's like, no, tomorrow. There is too much to digest from tonight. Bill says, all right, Liz, I'll be here tomorrow night with the gulls. Meaning seagulls. And so we want to wrap things up. So it amuses me that the amount of exposition you fit into the last couple of minutes of this episode would have taken Dark Shadows at least a week. As you say, Pit is definitely not a show that can be binged. At least not without risk of your head exploding. I guess I did write to her that. Having fully absorbed the don't binge admonition, I'm going to stop there for this time and reserve the next couple of episodes for my next missive.
Okay.
So, let's see what else there is for the Bill and Liz scene.
Oops, I don't remember who Bill the Ghost is. Nice mention of American isolationism. Yeah, she'd know that. Oh, neat. Bill's ghost sleeps, too. And I see you're injecting suspense by not telling us how Bill died yet.
From Guiding Light. I love Lily's positivity in this situation. The scene has a definite soap opera vibe. I love that in such a brief exchange, so much is said, so much emotion, peace of mind, even hope for the outcome in England. Glad Liz met with Bill. Lily is trying to be optimistic, says another pal, talking about hopes as opposed to troubles. Lily's family always tended to have happier things happen to them. Nice when building feelings expels themselves with no pretenses. More romance here. If ghosts don't sleep well, I wonder how long a good sleep for a ghost is. Don't think they needed to sleep, period, but imagine a tired ghost trying to haunt someone. Boo, yawn. I'm gonna slice. Falls. Everyone will marry and live happily ever after. Oh yeah, another pen pal. If ghosts could only make appointments, this is their way of making one, Lizzie. Not troubles, but hopes. For coming so far, endure, and having fun. Coming to terms with speaking to friends in the afterlife, good. Great to hear Lizzie admitting she knew Bill Malloy cared for the Enterprises and for the family, and he was honored hearing that. That neither could take care of Victoria, did not see that, and to have chosen Bill, and he'll sleep better now. Another pal. It is so nice hearing the heartfelt conversation between Elizabeth and Bill. It was really well done and very saddening at the same time. It's definitely one of those moments where an audience wonders about what could have been for these characters. It was definitely a bittersweet scene. I was getting a little ahead. From Hidden Object, for Liz, no troubles, hopes. It truly matters how we view life. It's encouraging to see Lily's positive spin on it. Hearing the truth is needed and freeing. It's too bad Bill had already died before learning it. The thought of a ghost sleeping is interesting. Oh, and that was the thing. When we get to... Yeah, because Hidden Object saying, oh, who cares with Milligan. When they're switching over, the hosts are switching over, Milligan is using lines that's from, I think, the beginning, opening of a DS episode, The Great House of Collinwood. Stands in majestic isolation under the brightness of a full moon, but none who live at Collinwood know that on this night, the full moon will mean something it has never meant before. It is the sign of a new and terrifying evil that prowls the woods of the Collinwood estate in search of a victim. And Hecubus, after that, asks, and the victim is, says, oh, who cares? That's like the beginning of a DS episode, but we're ending this Pit episode with that. And Hidden Object carries on, well, be careful what you wish for, Amy. You might just get more than what you bargained for. Because in that scene, and we're playing with, you know, Elizabeth Stoddard was the one that was, you know, being scared of the werewolf. But in this instance, it's Carolyn instead. She's like, is someone there? Is someone following me? Who is it? There's growls. And Amy comes out, stops the werewolf from attacking her. Peekaboo, I see you. What on earth was that? An animal? A big animal? Then it left when it saw me. And Carolyn, catching her breath, that stands to reason. Your boo is pretty effective. Amy says, true. You don't have to be afraid anymore. It's gone now. And Carolyn says, well, it ran away when it saw you. Who are you? My name is Amy Jennings, says Amy. And Milligan sighs, score another. My name is Hecubus. And Hecubus, scribbling, got it, master. Go back to Amy and Carolyn. Do you live around here? Yes, at Collinwood. And Amy, as in the original show, the big house by the water. Oh, it's very pretty. I wish I lived there. Carolyn asks, do you? Why, you're Chris's sister, aren't you? Yes. All right, then. We should go back, Amy, and who knows, your wish might come true. Take my hand, and we'll go back together. Okay, says Amy. And then we wrap up with Electric Moon by Claudine. I was just looking for a moon song. All due respect to the kids in the hall. Bewitched, 1960s TV show. Harry Potter series for the Voldemort reference. The Monsters, 1960s TV show. The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, 1960s TV show. House of Dark Shadows, 1970s movie. So I put it in the list. And, of course, Dark Shadows, 1960s TV show. So, what else did we have? I already got to in Objects, Commons, and then another pen pal. This was definitely lighter in tone, but quickly became suspenseful. Milligan and Hecuba's dialogue was quirky and fun, as usual, and I laughed out loud when I heard, oh, who cares? The way that line was delivered was so well-timed comedically. Even if it was meant to be that comedic. I also really liked the discordant music at the end of the scene. And another pal. A new and terrifying evil, peekaboo, I see you, and the werewolf to be afraid of. Amy and her boo is very effective. Your wish might come true in living at the house. Uh-oh, monster. Amy was probably scaring off the werewolf guy. Can't remember the name. Tom? And they'll be joining up at Collinsport. And another pal. Is the werewolf scared of little girls? Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, well, it's his sister, so he already instinctively knows, don't mess with family. And Guiding Light. I love that Carolyn Stoddard is trying to get Amy back into the house. The connection is already strong for me where these two characters are concerned. Mm-hmm. Warren. Carolyn and Amy Jennings. I love the entire episode. I like ending with the mysterious beast. And Helena. Carolyn is saved by Amy. You know, the rustling in the bushes reminded me of Snoopy going through the pumpkin patch when Linus thought that he was the Great Pumpkin. This is a good episode, Daryl. Yeah, it's pretty funny. O'Shane said, I love the title, Happy Hour in Hell. And in fact, why didn't I comment on that? I did enjoy the titular Happy Hour in which Diabolos and Angelique partook. Great intro text with the great House of Collinwood knows a terror it has never known before. Yada, yada stuff. It is so perfectly like the real overused episode intro text that they actually used. Well, that's the thing. I think I probably had to tell her. Well, it actually literally was. I really did lift it. And great sound effects walking in the woods. Again, perfectly right for what's used in the original episodes. So there are my notes. 2 weeks late. Apologies. Anything else? Another pen pal. She was laughing at my name is Amy Jennings and put a big smile. I like the ending song. Let me know more about it. I have to say, I love the CD player. Love that I can pause and come back to it easily after writing thoughts or doing chores. Made tea. The CD player is a sports car. Great performance. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, so she got it that way. Oh, wow. Is that actually the end of... I think it is.
All right, so let's wrap this up. And for people who aren't my pen pal, and only know me through the internet, you can leave comments at fanfiction.net. There's like this box at the end of every textual component where you write down what you thought of that component or the narrative discussion. That is actually, I'm not sure how smartphones work. I've never had one, and I hope to heaven I never have one because of the damage that I've seen it do to everybody. But anyway, whatever you got, tablet, computer, blah, 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 blah. There are these boxes. They're called comment boxes. They were invented 20 or so years ago, and the guy who invented them apologized in social media 20 years ago with an LDash. They interviewed people involved in things like Diaryland and LiveJournal, and the guy who invented the comment box was like, yeah, I invented that, I'm sorry. But anyway, there are these things called comment boxes, and that's where you like put stuff down, and if you can't do that, there's my email address. I will give it twice. xoiscythe@hotmail.com. xoiscythe@hotmail.com. Apparently, Google Hangouts is now called Google Chat. I am DWAR over there, just like I'm DWAR at YouTube, if you want to use that. I don't remember what I am. I think I'm just Daryl War over at Vimeo. There is also, if you can access DreamWidth, I am over there. I'm sure it's kind of... seems antiquated, but to me, it's like you have to think. So, daryl-war.dreamwith.org. Dream is in sleeping, width is in wide.
And then there's the WordPress sites, The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, one word, .wordpress.com is where the main ingredients, the main Radio Dropout episodes are. Regular without the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, .wordpress.com is the other blog, which I started years ago just to try and get myself sane again. And a lot of people just love the rants. I got so many hits for that, and I took them away, and now people wonder why they're gone. As well, I don't want to encourage you being hype obsessed, and if you are, go away, go somewhere else. Like, it just, yeah. So I have made myself very available for the sake that I wanted discussion, narrative discussion, and I look for that. I'm not worried about having a zillion followers or subscribers or likes or whatever. I said that before. It just was not what I was into. I did my best to try and do that to appease the social climate, and I decided it was bad and wrong and incredibly unhealthy. And that's why the Surgeon General is now involved, as far as I know. So yeah, there are plenty of ways to get in touch. And I have just gotten through my stack of pen pal mail from January. I am now working on February. And we'll see how I continue to heal through all of these problems. But in any case, I am sharing this, and I've done all this, and, you know, lost my shirt, in so many words, is the old saying, for the sake of narrative discussion. And that is about it. So, yeah, there's email, there is fanfiction.net, there is Google Chat, used to be called Hangouts. I'm sure you can use a search engine. There's more than Google out there. There's Start Page. There's Dogpile. There are other things. Mozilla, I guess. Firefox. That kind of thing. It's called a search engine, and you do a search, and that's how you find stuff on the internet. So, that is it. Hopefully you've enjoyed this retrospective into episode 19 in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, and you will get in touch, and I will hopefully be able to get back to you, and for the humble and loving portion of my audience, take care.